How's my ass looking in these new shorts I got?
It does create pressure.
You are listening to 101.9 CITR Radio, coming to you from UBC on unceded Musqueam territory. This is the Thunderbird Locker Room, giving you a backroom perspective on varsity athletes, coaches, and staff here at UBC. I'm a little bit rusty, give me a break, but today, again, we have another former varsity athlete who's not even an athlete still. Or she's an athlete, but not a varsity athlete anymore.
I was about to say, ouch.
Her name is Liz Gleadle. She's a javelin thrower for Canada. She's currently in UBC Kin doing her master's.
What? No.
What?
Oh, I'm graduated.
I've just done my undergrad.
Right? No, I just study for fun now.
Okay. All right. Well, I already messed up.
That's okay.
Okay, so she, in 2012, she went to London for the Olympics. So you're actually the first Olympian I've had on the show.
Yeah, who? Honored.
Rio, she went, so that was last year, 2016, again. I think you went, what did you place in both of those, 12th?
I was a finalist, I placed 12th in London, and then I was 16th in Rio.
Okay.
Kind of ironic, London 2012, 12th, Rio 2016, 16th. Yeah. Just realized that, actually.
And 2015, you're out of the World Championships.
Yes.
So, I'm just going to start off, you're a freak. Right? So you're huge? You're 6'1"?
Yeah, I'm 6'1".
For a girl, that's pretty big.
Yeah, that's my only freaky characteristic.
By freak, I mean, if you were in a lineup and someone said, which one's the Olympic athlete, you go, that one.
I get stared at.
And I feel like most, not every Olympian, not every Olympian looks like that. You know, who's that long distance runner, the English guy? He's really small.
Oh, Mo Farah.
Mo Farah, you wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup. Like, if you had a bunch of skinny black dudes, you'd be like, I don't know which one's the Mo Farah, right?
Yeah.
You think so?
Well, I think 6'1 women are just kind of rare to start with. And then on top of that, if you add some pretty big shoulders and lats and legs, then it's like, okay, yeah. I think you do something kind of athletic.
Do most of the girls that you compete, women that you compete against look basically like you?
Yeah, actually, I was kind of thinking about it the other day, and there's about 5 or 6 of us who are all between 6 feet and 6'3", who are blonde and all have the same build, and it's like you just line us up and we look like we could be related.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Do you think that's coincidence? Probably not, right?
I think that part. I mean, javelin is very popular in Nordic countries and in Germany, and so, you know, you're going to get a bunch of tall blonde girls throwing javelin.
Yeah.
But there's a spectrum, obviously. You compete with people from all over the world, but it is most popular probably in Europe.
So a lot, yeah. Field is quite popular in Europe, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like all those German dudes chucking shot puts
and discs
and stuff. So, So when you're in Canada, most of the schools you go to, even elementary school and high school, field is kind of, at least this is the look I got, was a little bit on the side. Like the only instruction I ever got with javelin was like Mr. Wong in grade 5 telling me to pick up the thing and just chuck it.
Right? Hope for the best.
So how do you get into a program where you actually build into an Olympian for a field event? Is it just one coach was like, I want you to throw, and then he takes you and carries you up to the Olympics, or how'd that work out?
Well, for one, I was just a really uncoordinated child in general, so okay. I hated running because I wasn't very biomechanically sound. So running was just difficult, and doing something difficult for a long period of time seemed really unappealing to me.
Yeah.
And I was in grade 8 gym class, and my gym teacher was Caroline Wittrin, who is a Pan Am bronze medalist in hammer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to describe the hammer?
So a hammer is a metal ball for men. I believe it weighs 14 pounds, and it's on the end of a wire, and you basically spin in a circle, same size roughly as a shot put circle. I think it's a bit smaller, actually. And you spin 3 to 4 times, and you let it go.
You just chuck it.
And you just chuck it.
Okay.
There's a funny story I can tell you later about me getting hit by a hammer.
I was going to ask about it on the field, but we'll get to it later.
Anyway, so Caroline Wittren was my gym teacher, and you know, we were lucky enough to have javelins at Kitsilano High School.
Okay.
And you know, they're old and kind of rusty, but whatever, they worked.
Yeah.
And we all lined up, and you know, some people hit themselves in the back of the head, some of them flipped the javelin, some of them did all kinds of weird stuff trying to throw.
Yeah.
And I was a fast pitch pitcher. And so I had this lower body mechanic where I just kind of thought about
That's such a rookie move. I'm sorry.
What?
My phone is vibrating.
Oh, dear.
Okay, keep going.
So I kind of thought about it for a second. I'm like, okay, I play baseball. It's a stick.
So
it's not
fast,
a ball.
So you're overhand, fast pitch.
Fast pitch, underhand.
Underhand. Oh, okay.
So I was like, it's a stick, not a ball. So, you know, you can't apply rotational force. I'm like, theoretically, you should probably push through the length of the javelin.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of picked it up, and I got it, and I just threw it, and it kind of did this nice little parabole and landed tip first.
Point down.
I was like, oh, that wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
And so she just said, hey, you should, you know, not try out for the track team, but join the track team.
Because
like you said, you know, track and field is, you know, throws and field kind of gets pushed to the side.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a make it kind of a situation. It was like, show up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I was just kind of messing around with it in high school, 1 month out of the year. And in the 10th grade, I went to BC High Schools, which back then was all grades 8 through 12 competed together.
Okay. I remember I went to BC High Schools for like track. I wore shorts with flames on them. I was running the 100 meter.
Sexy.
I was like,
you're like, I'm so fast.
Yeah.
I got the flames.
Exactly. I'm such a nerd. Okay, keep going.
Yeah. So I go and I come third and I'm a grade 10. So I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, right?
Oh, this is 8 to 12.
Yeah. So I came third.
Oh, so you're competing against.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And someone comes up to me and they say, hey, you should go to BC's for your age group. It's, you know, totally, you know, it's a club thing. I'm like, okay, sure. Why not? Show up and I win.
So how much so you'd had the 2 years at?
Yeah. It's like 1 month a year. You're like twice a week. You're kind of just messing around. Yeah.
So you had barely any.
Yeah. So then I win BC's, and they're like, oh, you've made the BC team. Congratulations. You can go to nationals. We have nationals?
You didn't even know?
Shock.
Yeah.
Absolute shock.
I'm sure there was girls training all year to make it, and you just show up.
Oh, yeah. And then the funny part is I go to nationals thinking, you know, I'm going to get my butt kicked, but, you know, it's going to be so much fun. It's something different. I'd always only played really team sports, and it's my first time playing individual sport. And I show up, and I throw a new personal best, which at the time was, I think, 39 meters, and I win.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was like, huh, I guess I'm kind of good at this throwing thing.
Yeah.
So I ended up training the next year with the Vancouver Thunderbirds, which was a track club, not to be mistaken with the UBC Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
And I went to World Youth that year, and I had the top place ever for track and field at World Youth.
For a Canadian?
For a Canadian.
Okay.
Which is obviously... For all events.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's, just kind of turned into this thing that I ended up being good at, and I ended up loving.
Yeah. I was going to actually talk about the... Like, how it came natural to you. And, like, throwing a javelin is very... It seems like a very primal movement for people. Like, there's, what, crawling and, like, the throw, the overhand throw, especially
you can
with,
walk,
a,
you wanna
with
throw.
A spear. Like, that's how you got your dinner, was chucking a spear.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you think it just... Maybe it was from back, like, 1,000 years ago, you had some dude who could just chuck a spear
genetics.
Into the eye of
an Amazon warrior princess.
Okay, so you brought up getting hit with a hammer. Tell me, please.
Oh, God. So, in Lethbridge...
Don't they put nets up in...
Oh, yeah. No, just... I'll explain. So, in Lethbridge, we have an indoor training facility. So, it's a 3-basketball-court gym, but the furthest basketball court has this blue track flooring, and so you can walk on it in spikes.
Okay.
So, basically, this huge net comes down the entire length of the gym, and it's a big oval, and it falls down, so we go inside our net.
Yeah.
And we
Wait, so hold on. I'm trying to get my bearings here. So the net, is it down the middle of
No, it surrounds the entire gym.
Oh, okay.
It's this big oval that just drops on top of this blue floor gym.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So what we would do is we would set it up so that on one half, towards the end, there'd be a hammer circle. So we'd drop down these pieces of wood, and we'd have a special surface so hammer throwers could throw.
Okay.
And then along the side of that, the entire length of the basketball court, we'd throw down a runway, and that would be our javelin runway. So what would happen is... Yeah. A thrower would throw, and then a hammer thrower would throw, and then a javelin thrower would then, as soon as they released and went to go retrieve their hammer, we would kind of walk with them to the net while they were retrieving, and we'd go throw the other way.
You throw back toward.
Yeah, so we, you know, we'd try to stack it.
How far is this walk down?
That's not bad. This isn't the dangerous part.
Is it further than you can throw it, though?
No. So we have these nets, so we don't have to retrieve.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it's controlled environment, and we don't have to retrieve. So you get more throws in a stable condition.
Right.
So that's the beauty of training indoors.
Yeah.
So, so basically, in hammer, there's kind of a safe zone based on the centrifugal force of the hammer. So there's this kind of, if you were to picture a hammer net, so it's a circle, and then there's a net going out.
It's like a slice of pizza.
It's like a slice of
pizza,
exactly.
With the point where you are and then the...
Yeah, so it's going out towards a field.
Yeah.
That is obviously not a safe zone. So you turn in a counterclockwise motion to throw hammer.
Okay.
And so if...
Is that like you have to? Sorry.
No, it's just easier because they actually angle the nets differently.
Really?
Oh, yeah. So it's if you want to turn the other way, you actually have a better chance of fouling more throws.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So basically half of the circle is safe and half is not.
Yeah.
And I was standing probably in the worst place possible.
Why were you standing there?
I didn't know.
Okay.
I just didn't understand that that was an unsafe place.
Yeah.
And so what happens is that hammer wires, because they get bent, they just, you know, they become weak because you bend something enough times,
okay,
it's going to become weak. And that day, the Canadian record holder for men in hammer, who
is a massive dude,
two-time Olympian,
yeah,
his hammer wire snapped and it bounced, and I had time to see the bounce on the ground and think, oh shit,
so
and it
bounced.
Hit my leg.
Oh, at least you didn't get hit in the head.
Oh, no, it's like it literally hit the meatiest part of my body, like the safest part of my body. Below the knee, leg gone.
Yeah.
You know, in the gut, you've got massive internal damage.
Or in the knee.
Oh, God, no. Seriously, it's literally the golden zone. Now I just have this.
Your ass and it would have been fine.
Oh.
Did you have a huge, like, Charlie horse there?
Oh, you can Google it. Just Google, like, Liz Gleedel bruise, and I think it comes up.
Really?
Oh, man.
They posted it?
Oh, no, I posted it because I used to write a blog. I think I did. I'm not going to say I used to write a blog. I did 3 blog posts in the hopes of getting myself interested in a blog.
Okay.
No leg, just bruise. There we go.
Oh, holy crap. That looks like, you've seen Jackass before, right?
Yeah.
Remember when Johnny Knoxville gets hit with the beanbag shotgun?
Oh, yeah.
That's what that looks like, but on your leg.
Yeah, so that first bruise is literally 15 minutes after I got hit.
And it already looks like this.
Yeah, so I basically like limped
size.
Away.
That's
and,
bigger than a softball.
Oh, yeah, that's big. When you think about how big my leg is, then you realize how big that bruise is.
And then it's looks basically like, your whole thigh is purple and green and nasty.
Yeah, it looks like a galaxy on my leg.
So what kind of, did they, so after it, like, the swelling goes down, were they doing that, where they rub it?
Oh, yeah. Well, for the first little bit,
in.
I couldn't even touch it.
Oh, really?
It was, oh, yeah. I woke up the next morning and I actually had to crawl to the washroom and throw up.
Oh, jeez.
And what happens when you get a bruise that big, it's called a third-degree contusion. And you actually get something called dead leg. So your muscle stops being able to contract, and it's just a safety mechanism.
So you just can't walk, basically.
Straight up can't flex your muscles.
Oh, my God.
And, you know, like the whole wiggle your big toe,
so
Uma Thurman, Kill Bill kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I would sit there and be like, flex your quad. Just, just do
really?
It.
Oh, really? It just won't do it?
Oh, no. It's just, it's dead.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I rehabbed the heck out of it. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I actually got hit in January of 2012, and I ended up making the Olympics 4.5 months later.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So how long did this take to go away? Did it?
Well, I mean,
did it still aggravate you when you're in that?
It aggravated me probably for another like year and a half. But I mean, realistically, it didn't hurt after 3 months, except for to poke it.
Yeah.
And then I would get angry at people if they chose to try and poke my leg.
How pissed? That's such a stupid injury to get.
It was my
like,
own
how
fault.
Pissed
I wasn't
off for you.
No, I was angry at myself. Because I was trying to make my first Olympics. I moved to Lethbridge, which at the time I didn't love it there. Now
it's Lethbridge.
Well, yeah, but like now I love going there because it's my place of work and I get so much done and I'm truly focused and happy.
You got nothing else going on there to distract you?
No, not really. And so, yeah, at the time I was like, I've moved all the way out here. I've put my degree on hold and I get this stupid bruise because I'm too stupid to move. And, yeah, so, I mean, it ended up working out. I made the Olympics. I set a new Canadian record. It was an amazing year, so.
Okay, so I remember a long time ago, I was watching, I think it was, what was it? Some, like, craziest home or something like that. And all it showed in the field was all these people just getting hit by javelins. there was one. Just I'm trying to find it, but there was one where the guy. It was one of the judges, and he's just like walking. And
okay, he pretends like nothing happens.
Through his neck.
Yeah, he gets him right at like.
I think he survived though.
Yeah.
It went through his neck, and there's one where the guy. It's like in the gut. And he's like, oh. I shouldn't be laughing, but oh god.
I hit a cameraman this year.
You did?
Yeah, but...
With the point?
He watched it come at the camera.
He was like, oh, it's going to be a great shot.
Oh, my God. We're like, no, move.
I'm going to get a raise after this.
Oh, God. But anyway, it actually ended up going right through the kangaroo pocket of his hoodie.
Like this part?
So he was kind of looking at it from the side, so he had his body angled, and when it came in, it just went basically like through his pocket.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
He must have to pray every day after that. Okay, let's watch this one. Have you seen, I don't know, Golden League Rome?
Oh, no, this is with Tero Pekkamäki. I've seen this.
Have you?
Yeah. Well, it's bad because he hits, what's interesting is he goes left, which a lot of the time throwers go to the right.
This is really bad quality.
Yeah. There's actually an amazing picture in Sports Illustrated where it's actually just a shot from a camera because the camera was on the long jumper, triple jumper, or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, it's a triple jumper.
And they basically froze frame it, and you can see it about a meter away from this jumper.
Oh.
And it's just it's just right before you see him, he's ready to go execute his jump, and then there's just, this impending doom of a javelin coming towards him.
Okay, I'm going to watch.
There you go.
This one?
Yeah, right there. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, my God.
He's, like, ready to go, and then it hits him.
Yeah.
So and it missed everything. It didn't actually end up causing any long-term damage,
right,
I think. Yeah. It just, like, missed all his organs.
Okay, so if you want to see his picture, it's Salim SD, Salim space SDIRI. And the picture has the javelin point is touching his back.
Yeah.
It's just about to go into him.
I don't think he's quite realized it's happening.
He has no idea.
Yet.
The people around him don't even. This guy's looking the other way.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's insane. Oh, yeah, and you can see.
Are you never, like, even after you got hit with that hammer, are you never scared that you're going to get hit with something when you're out on the field there?
Well, actually, I was really proud of myself, and I was pretty immature when I was 23.
Yeah.
And one of the first things I did the next day was go sit back inside that net.
Okay.
And I was obviously sitting not in the same place that I got hit. I
went
and sat in a safe place, but I thought to myself, I'm not going to let myself be scarred by just some irrational fear. I'm planning on doing this for a really long time, and I need to be in the mindset that I'm here to work when I'm inside this net. And if every time I'm inside this net and I'm feeling nervous or anxious or whatever, that's not good.
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of this really proactive step to just get back at it.
Especially from a freak accident like that.
Oh, yeah. And it's, it's...
Preventable,
but you also have to remember that some things are kind of out of your control.
That's true.
It was a bad chance that it broke, and it was a bad chance that I was standing there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, bad stuff happens.
That's true.
Like... I was doing cleans last year, and I forgot to hook grip the bar, so basically wrap your thumb underneath your fingers, and I have very weak grip strength, and 80% of the way through the push of doing this clean, I basically released the bar because I didn't hook grip it, and I landed flat on my butt, and it gave me a shock injury to my spine.
Oh, really?
And it was just from, this little inattention thing.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. You can't be afraid of doing cleans now. You really have to kind of...
So actually, one of my buddies, his dad is the Olympic rowing coach for the men's.
Oh, no way!
Like the men's eight, I think he does a lot of the teams. But he was out at UVic.
Yeah.
And he's showing the guys how to clean one day. He's like 40 something. Like,
yeah, he's also a coxie.
He's
isn't
an
he?
Old man.
He was a coxie.
Was he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So he's not his specialty. He's not strength. And he goes to doesn't warm up right. I'm pretty sure he's wearing jeans. He goes to clean and breaks his wrist on the first one.
Oh, man.
Like, is it?
That's like big, strong men. You were like, I play baseball. I know how to throw a javelin. I'm like, mm-hmm. And then they go and try and throw it, and then, they strain their back or something.
Yeah. That's another thing, too. I saw you, training in the gym, and you're, thoracic
mobility.
Extension is crazy.
Thank you.
You're like, wait, obviously that's an asset for javelin. Do you, train extension? But you got to have them both, right? You got to be able to extend and then snap back at the same time.
Well,
right?
That's a big difference between mobility and flexibility. Flexibility is just being flexible and being able to have great range of movement. Mobility is being able to have a range of movement as well as strength at those end ranges.
Okay, that makes sense. So You said your grip strength is weak.
Yeah, it's just always been a thing.
Wouldn't grip strength help you throw the javelin?
No, because you want to be relaxed. You want to hold it like a bird and launch it like a rocket.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know that, so.
Yeah, I know.
So when you're out, so I know one track and field athlete.
Oh?
Other than you.
Okay.
Actually, no.
And we just met.
I'm trying to think of, yeah, by name I know none except for, no, there's that one kid from Bahrain, the high jumper.
Mm-hmm.
He's sick. Yeah. He looks so cool. He just looks cool when he does the jump. But Valerie Adams, do you know her? She's the shot putter from New Zealand.
Her.
That's the only one I know.
No, she's cool.
She's a freak, too. She's huge. I think she got silver this year, and I think she retired after. I'm not sure.
Yeah, she got silver this year to Cleo. No, it's not Cleo.
Some other giant lady.
It was Michelle Carter.
Okay.
Miss Shot Put Diva. I think that's her Twitter.
The Shot Put Diva?
Yeah, she's beautiful. She loves to do herself up. She's like, you know, that's her thing.
Yeah.
No, Valerie's super cool, though. Her story is amazing. She's just had, like, a really hard family life, and she grew up in New Zealand and ended up getting into shot put, and it's kind of shot put became this thing that kind of almost saved her.
Yeah.
Because of just...
grew up in Auckland in, like, the... Like a really rough part of it.
Yeah, and her mom got married to this guy who ended up kicking her out. Yeah, her mom, this guy ended up like kicking her out when her mom passed away.
Oh, really?
And it was, yeah, she's a book. I think it's just called Valerie, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't read the book. I should probably do that if she's the only track and field athlete I know.
Yeah, no, she's cool.
Yeah, I watched, the Blues, Cardiff Blues, or not Cardiff Blues, the Auckland Blues, they're a rugby team in New Zealand. And she was at their preseason training, and she's standing there, and she's bigger than
everybody.
All of them.
Yeah.
Do you know who Sonny Bill is?
No, I don't.
Okay, he's one of the best players. He's 6'4", 240, and he looks like a child compared to her. And she's watching them do their snatches and cleans and stuff, and the cameras or the interview lady's like, so how do you think the boys did today? She's like, oh, they did okay.
No, she's awesome. I've trained with her a couple times, and she just makes things look so easy. She's so strong.
Yeah. But are you trained with her?
Yeah, no, I've been on the circuit with her, so I've had like lunch and dinner with her. Like I see her
League?
Around. Yeah.
Oh, you've been on Diamond League before?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess you would have.
I've done like 10 or 12 of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. Been on circuit for a couple of years.
Yeah. Because I've seen it on TV a couple times.
Yeah.
And it's pretty. I mean.
No, she's wonderful though. She's a wonderful person.
Yeah. Yeah, New Zealand loves her. She's like the star.
Oh, she's a huge star.
Because they're not good at any other track and field events, I don't think. Well, they got that one guy. No, don't they have a high jumper that's good or a pole vaulter girl, maybe?
I'm not sure.
Okay. All right, we're going to go to our first break here on the Thunderbird Locker Room, coming to you from UBC on unceded Musqueam territory on 101.9. And then we'll get back with Liz Gleedel, the Olympic javelin thrower. Tosser, thrower, tosser, one of those. See you in a bit.
Are you looking for a volunteer opportunity that fits your schedule? Being a big sister takes less time than you think, and you can choose the volunteer opportunity that fits your life. Spend just 1 hour a week as a study buddy, tutor, or 2 hours a week as a big sister. Check out the various mentoring programs at Big Sisters of BC Lower Mainland and find a volunteer position and a little sister that will suit you to a T. Visit bigsisters.bc.ca for more information today.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Thanks, Peter. This is the Thunderbird Locker Room, and we are interviewing today Liz Gleedel, the Olympic javelin thrower. So what kind of athletes did you sort of look up to in track and field, other than the lady who was your gym teacher? I'm sure you looked up to her, but...
No, she was cool. We had a good time hanging out. No, I like to... It was really weird. I went through this phase for a while where I kind of was anti-role model, and it wasn't because... I know, just, let me I'll talk about it. You'll get it.
Okay.
I was just kind of seeing that people would hold me up sometimes, like for little kids, they'd hold me up on a pedestal and be like, you know, I have so many faults.
Yeah.
And don't look at me as this person who's got it all together, mm-hmm. because I'm really good at throwing javelin and I have my nutrition down and, you know, I'm very driven, but you know, there's lots of things about me that aren't so admirable or, you know, could be way better. But then I've come to realize that your heroes aren't necessarily your heroes for everything about them. It's for some way that you want to something that you want to emulate.
Exactly.
So more recently, I'm actually forgetting his name, but there's this guy who ran the 400 meters. He was South African, and
Wade Van Niekerk.
Yank.
That guy's a freak.
Such a freak. I was watching that, and I was just yelling at the TV. I was like, "This is amazing!" Yeah.
Didn't he run it like 43 seconds or something?
Yeah. Oh man.
I'm gonna look up his record. It's ridiculous. I think it's Wayne Van Niekerk, isn't it?
Yeah. Some people theorize that he has no pain threshold because he used to pass out after pretty much every single one of his races, and he would just push himself to that point, and then his body would just shut down.
Oh really?
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Okay. Here he is.
Yeah, I used to look up to, or I guess I still kind of do in a way, Barbara Spodikova.
Who's that?
She's the world record holder for women's javelin. She has thrown 72 meters, and I think she's done it clean.
72, you think she did? I was going to talk to you about
steroids. I'm not totally sure. I mean, we all knew that the Russian Maria Apakamova was on drugs. I mean, you honestly, like, I hate to say this, but you take one look at her, and you're like, that's not a natural woman. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Okay, I just had to, so... Wade Van Niekerk. He's a South African.
Mm-hmm.
He's 24. He ran the 400 meter in 43.03 seconds.
It's unbelievable.
400 meters.
Yeah.
That's just over 10 seconds.
It's one of the most memorable things about the Rio Olympics in track and field.
That was cooler than Usain Bolt winning again.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, nothing is cooler than Andre deGrasse and Usain Bolt just grinning at each other after the two. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But, and there's another one. I keep forgetting people's names, but I love the grit that this took from this girl. She was the 400 meter... Did she win? I think so.
Oh, is that the one that dove?
The picture from it is the best part of the photo finish. So everyone else is running, and, you know, in these photo finishes, people's limbs are kind of elongated, and it's really exaggerated so that you can see whose chest passes the finish line first. And this girl is horizontal across the finish line.
Yeah.
And she ends up winning it.
You're allowed to do it,
right? It's chest first. But I was like, this girl was willing to sacrifice pretty much the entire front of her body to get that medal.
Well,
and
yeah.
It was, you know, she was focused down to the last second. And I just, you know, I love Allison Felix. I think she's so phenomenal. And, like, she's a really nice person. She's really easy to hang out with and talk to. And, like, she'll talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. And, I really respect her.
Does she have a dope accent?
Is she American?
This one?
No, Allison Felix.
Who's that?
Allison Felix has won the 400 multiple times.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she's one of the most decorated track and field athletes. And this girl took it from her.
Oh, that's her right there behind her?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's super cool.
This is why saying all the work is done already is fucking bullshit. You know, people say you go to the gym and, oh, we already did all the work. Like, it's easy now. This was not from the gym.
No. That's wanting it to the last second.
Yeah.
But there's a difference between saying, you know, we don't rise to the levels of our expectations. We fall to the levels of our training. And so, you know, there's... that's really important because, you know, you have to approach every single day like it matters, like it's going to give you that extra inch.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when it comes down to the line, you have to be confident in your training, but that doesn't mean you give up and say, yeah, you know, I got this. Like, that's not what it comes down to.
Yeah.
But you do have to prepare yourself and not get cocky, you know. It's important.
Yeah.
To want it to the last second.
That's true. So you brought up steroids. So most people these days, I would think, assume that everyone or most people at the Olympics, especially in track and field, are on drugs.
That's one of the dirtiest sports in the world.
Yeah, so
the
Russians got banned, like the whole team.
Really so.
Except for a couple. Did they let any of the Russian throwers get in?
No. Well, one of them just tested positive.
Oh, really?
So look up Maria Apakamova.
Is she in... Yeah. Does she look like she's on...
Oh, no. It's not even up for debate. I put her number on her back in 2012, and she just, you know, pulled her shirt up over her shoulders, and I just almost cried. I was like, ha!
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Just take a look at her pictures. It's not even up for debate.
Yeah. She looks like a dude. She's more jacked than I am.
She's beautiful,
I mean,
she's like, I don't care how much I ever train or how much protein or whey I take, I will never look like that.
Yeah. So can you wear weight belts like that? You're allowed to wear?
Not a weight belt, it's a lumbar belt.
Okay.
Because when you do javelin, because you're in these really high flexibility positions, mm-hmm. it is hard to maintain that strength in those positions. And so sometimes you'll kind of compromise your core to basically get some more reach, but that can really pinch stuff and people get all kinds of back injuries.
Yeah, I was going to say, because you're moving basically the same way every time, right? You're right-handed?
Mm-hmm.
So you're twisting to your shoulder back right every time. Does that, like, Tiger Woods got messed up basically just from hitting the same way every time?
Yeah. Well, I do a ton of physio, so that's, you know, that's a lot of it.
So
I'm
do you
so
ever,
asymmetrical.
Do you twist the other way as well, just in training, just to balance it, or what do you do for that?
I do some stuff, but, I mean, realistically, like, you give me a javelin and ask me to throw it left-handed, I'm going to look just as silly as everybody else who's picking up a javelin for the first time and throwing it with their dominant hand.
So it's like writing with your opposite hand.
Yeah, it's a highly, highly skilled movement. So javelin is one of the most technical events in track and field, pole vault and hammer being the others. And
oh
it's,
my God. Yeah, this lady's jacked.
Yeah. Yeah. So you really, like, you can train your left side a bit, but at the end of the day, you have to say, like, okay, how much is this actually going to make the throw go further? Or how much is this actually going to make me be healthy?
Yeah.
Because javelin isn't that healthy for your body in the first place.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I know, like, rowers get messed up on one side too, or canoers and stuff, paddlers, like, because they're just doing the one side every time.
Yeah.
So
that's a lot more reps, though, also over a lot longer period of time. I'm explosive, and so I only do, you know, full throws. I'll do 10 to 30 kind of full-out intensity throws.
Yeah.
And it's not the same as doing, you know, stroke on stroke on stroke on stroke. Yeah, and really repeating that motion.
Well, that's the thing with the... this lady, she looks like a freak. Maria
Abakumova.
They can get, the thing with steroids is a lot of the time it doesn't even make you look more jacked. You can get more reps in, right?
Exactly. So you recover better.
Easier.
It's all about the recovery.
Yeah. So when you go to a meet and you see girls like this, most of the time you're like, okay, she's...
she's on crank.
What about other athletes in... like, well, just walking around the track, you'll see, like, sprinters and stuff, and you'd be like, that's
ridiculous. Well, some people, they've had a positive test, and...
Do they kind of get shunned by the rest of the athletes, like, if they gotten tested positive?
Yeah. It's, in Canada especially, I think we really have a zero tolerance policy among athletes, and, you know, if you're caught doping, it's a pretty big deal. I think some stuff on the list needs to be unbanned.
Like,
just for, like, weed needs to be unbanned.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hurting anybody. I don't think it's against the ethics of sport.
Doesn't make you any better.
It doesn't.
Well, for most sports.
It'll help you recover. CBD has incredible research based on recovery, reducing inflammation.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
There's tons of stuff that could, you know, over other drugs that might, you know, people might be in pain and might have to get a prescription for.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, then there's other stuff. There's stuff for ADHD. One of my buddies is a thrower, and he had to get a therapeutic use exemption for his medication. And he ended up not liking it because it made him really groggy, and he found it kind of decreased his drive. But, I mean, there's some people who really need that medication, and then,
you know. Exemptions, though, right?
Yeah.
Like you said.
One of my old training partners had that same thing, and his drug that he needed for his ADD or ADHD was now on the completely banned list, and you were not allowed to get a therapeutic use exemption for it, but he needed it for his job. Like, he needed to be able to do his work and make money.
Yeah.
And so he ended up getting testing positive.
So he just kept taking, like, he's like,
well, he's like, he has to function. He has to be a human, right?
Yeah.
He has to function in society and has a kid to look after, and...
Yeah.
You know, there's some stuff. I try and take that into consideration. Like, okay, what were they banned for?
Like, if they were out partying and took some ecstasy and then got popped for that.
You're just stupid.
Yeah.
Like, come on. Like, figure it out. You're a top-level athlete. Figure it out.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, it's... you got to kind of judge the situation a little bit.
Yeah.
If it's steroids, if it's some kind of serious performance-enhancing drug, then I'm, you know... I don't have a tolerance for that. I think you're a cheat, and I think that you are not a good person. Like, you know, you really have to, but you have to judge the situation on the person, on the drug, on what's going on.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
it's not all black and white.
There's that whole Lance Armstrong thing. How long ago was that now? Maybe 6, 7,
oh God, yeah.
8 years? Where he got popped, and then they gave it to the next guy, and then he got popped. And it was down to, like, number 38 for every year he won.
Yeah.
It was down to, like, the 38th place person until they found someone who not even didn't take drugs, who didn't get caught. Mm-hmm. So it might even be lower on that.
38. That's incredible.
It was something crazy.
But that's
that.
how rampant it is. Like weightlifting, cycling, track and field. It's crazy. Well,
track and field is like one of the most competitive. Mm-hmm. Anyone can run. Anyone can.
Yeah, but some people just have better biomechanics or better firing rates. You know, there's some stuff. Like, I don't care how hard you train or how many drugs you take, you will not be as good as Usain Bolt. Like, the man has better biomechanics and more fast twitch fibers that were God-given. And, sorry.
Well, it's pretty obvious when he's jogging through the end
that no one else
is in connection. God, that's
just so relaxed.
Yeah, that's one of the, like, you see that stuff and you're like, it makes you just question why you even try to be an athlete.
Oh, I know what you mean.
You're like, what?
And you're like, but he was doing that when he was 19?
Yeah.
Like,
So right now, are you still training for, when's the next one?
2020.
2020? Are you looking at getting into that one as well, or no?
No, not at all. So javelin throwers in general, really, we're in our peak in our late 20s.
Okay.
Late 20s, early 30s.
Oh, wow.
So I just turned 28 a couple months ago. So I'm right in my prime. It was a little bit disheartened after the last year. I had some trouble after that injury I mentioned earlier about missing my clean. It really messed up my lower back for a little bit, and it totally messed up my coordination. And so, so when you throw a javelin, you do these things called crossovers, where you're basically running sideways.
Yeah.
But it's not karaoke, so one foot does not go behind the other. You're just running sideways. So for the first time ever in my life, because I was so uncoordinated, I did a crossover behind my back leg and tripped myself after that injury. But it was, you know, kind of like I just kind of couldn't get it together on
what
a coordination
happened?
Level.
Do you know what happened? Like,
it was just a shock injury. So it basically compressed a bunch of my lumbar spine. And the next morning when I'd actually woken up, I was like, oh, you know, before I went to bed, I was like, yeah, my hips are kind of tight, my quads kind of spazzing a little, but whatever, shake it off. And I wake up in the morning, and mid-quad to my bottom ribs, every single muscle is spazzing.
Oh, really?
I had to roll out of bed onto the floor and then crawl to stand up.
That's crazy.
And I went to my physio that night. She got me into an emergency Saturday night session at 6 p.m., I'm good friends with my physio. And I think I had a two-hour session, and I got about 60 IMS needles in, like, my butt, my hips, in my hip flexors, everything.
Just needled the crap out of you.
And the next day, I had to go to training camp in Phoenix.
Did you go?
I went, but it was, you know, the first 2 weeks were pretty much a waste of time.
Yeah.
And it was tough, and, you know, I was trying to make it work, and I was really proud of myself for those first couple months. I was really like, you know what, every practice is a new practice, and you should just approach it that you're coming back from something that was a bit of a hit, but, you know, you've been hit with a hammer and made the Olympics, I'm sure you can get back from this.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of months and months of this, telling myself this, and then every practice wouldn't go so well, and I would feel uncoordinated and unworthy of even being there. And then I kind of mentally broke in probably about May, when it just wasn't coming together after these couple of months.
Okay.
And I started doing weird things in my run-up, and I started kind of ignoring my training. And I ended up having to see, well, not having to see, I ended up choosing to see a sports psych. Yeah, I actually saw Peter Crocker at UBC.
Okay.
And he just gave me some really basic things that helped, you know, like.
What kind of stuff did he?
So my first thing was that I was freaking out mid-competition. I had no routine, and I am a creature of habit. I love my routines.
You're like a hockey player almost.
Oh, my God. My mornings are the same every day. Oh, yeah. But it's important, because you stop. When you're in the middle of a competition, it's not time to make changes. Like we said, the work is done. Your motor patterns are set.
Yeah.
And you're not going to change anything during the season. Like, that's just a poor choice.
You just try harder, basically.
Kind of. So I was trying to change stuff mid-throw, and then I wouldn't be focusing on what I needed to do for the competition. I'd be focusing on what I needed to change.
Okay.
And that can be really difficult, because you start being hard on yourself. You start trying to, like, oh, why did you do that? Like, why wasn't your arm long? And it kind of gets negative. And what I started to do with Peter was that we created a routine so that I got back to doing what I used to do. So I do my warm up the same thing, same way every single time. I'd go, I'd put my stuff down on the benches. I'd go, I'd measure out my run up. I'd do one half throw, one run through, so no throwing, just a full throw run through, two full throws, and then I'd go sit down, chill out, do some stretches. If I was the first thrower up or first couple throwers up, you just basically go grab your javelin, approach the line, take a deep breath, see the throw in your mind, and then do it.
See, notice, even you saying that process, that sounds like I could do it.
It
like,
is.
That's
but,
how easy it sounds, you know?
But what's nice about that is, so then, you know, I have my throw, and then I have 8 to 10 throwers to wait for. So then I go, I put on my warm-up gear, I sit, take a deep breath, just try and calm down my system, and then I'll just hang out. And I don't worry about javelin for a couple minutes. And then I know when I'm 5 throwers out, I go and do a quick run through on the sideline. When I'm 3 throwers out, take off the warm-up clothes. When I'm 1 thrower out, go grab a javelin. Then I get on the runway, it's my turn. But notice how I'm not thinking about what I need to do in the throw or what other girls are doing or what officials are doing or what the crowd looks like. It doesn't matter. All that matters, like, it's the same every single time. There's 30 meters of runway and me. And there are no other variables. And so it's really important not to overthink it, because at the end of the day, I'm throwing a stick. And I love it. I love throwing.
Yeah.
And thinking about, you know, oh, am I going to make the final? Am I going to get a sponsor? I'm going to lose a sponsor. Am I, you know, worrying about all these things isn't.
How's my ass looking, these new shorts I got?
No, for sure. No, but like, you know, it's all these little things that don't help you throw further. The only thing that's going to help you throw further is having fun and enjoying the moment. And so really thinking about that moment was so crucial for getting through it. And so although a lot of my season didn't go overly well, the Olympics actually went really well comparatively, because I think I had my second best throw of the year.
Okay.
Because I approached it methodically. And that's my system. And so, like, we really got into my own head and we catered to how I perform at my best. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of my way of getting through it, was just creating a system.
So when when I watch the track and field, which is one of the only things I watch at the Olympics.
Thanks.
I watch the track and field, mostly the track, I'm not going to lie. the weightlifting.
Yeah.
What else do I watch? And the swimming. Well, everyone watches the swimming.
Excuse me.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys, like, are most of the girls like you, where they just do, like, they have the routine already and you don't really talk to each other?
Well,
I always see them, they'll chuck it or they'll do that and then they'll go put their jacket on and there's not really like a, hey, what's up? Like, not until like the end of the thing. Or is there stuff?
It depends on the person. And I think, you know, everybody has their own way of dealing with things. We're all different people. We all have different things that make us tick.
Yeah.
I know I can get along with some of the other American girls and some of the Aussies. We just will chat a little bit in between or whatever.
You know, you know most of them.
Oh yeah,
by the time you're there,
I know everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, you respect that some people are kind of like almost angry looking or extra focused, or and I've tried to do that. I don't think it's best for me. I think I need to relax a little bit between throws, and you know, when it's time to throw, I'm focused, but it's not a serious focused. I'm just, you know, I'm grabbing my javelin, I'm walking to the line, and I'm not thinking about anything other than what is next.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you give, like, I was talking about how primal the javelin is. Do you, like, after you throw it, I'd love to see you.
No, I don't yell at it after. I yell at it, like, sometimes I'll let out, like, a, ah!
Like tennis?
Yeah. Oh, no. It's none of that.
Okay.
It just happens because it's pressure being released.
Okay.
But, you know, sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't yell after the javelin.
So I've still got the picture of that girl who got caught doping. I've seen girls do this one. They get the double fist and they, like, try and push it with their voice.
You never know, hey.
Or the
you can
the
make molecules buddies. Change if you smile, so why not?
Yeah, the shot, not the the hammer throwers, they do lots of screaming.
But it's different when you're letting it go, though, because you are creating like a kind of like a Valsalva maneuver of sorts.
Okay.
Like when you're lifting and you hold your breath, and like it does create pressure and it does create a little bit more tension and force. So, you know, if you're winding up this huge big throw and you're holding onto a breath and you throw and you release it and you release the pressure in your lungs at the same time or at the right time. It's going to make sound, and it might help you throw further.
Okay, so we're almost out of time because I got to go to class. But
oh, class.
Yeah. Let's talk about, so we were in the gym, and you talked about you do some meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So did that spring from when you went to the sports psych? What's his name again?
Peter Crocker.
Peter Crocker. He probably made you do some visualization stuff.
Yeah, so...
Did you get interested in meditation from that, or how'd that work out?
No, I'd actually been doing it earlier in the year, but then I got away from it because when I went to that period of time where I was very frustrated with my technique,
yeah.
I was kind of like, screw it, nothing's helping anyway.
okay.
No, it was kind of like, I hate to say, it was a little bit dark of a time. It wasn't going well, and when you feel like you're doing everything right and nothing is working for you, mm-hmm. sometimes you just, you know, I don't think it was very effective for me to do this, but I kind of scrapped the board. But no, I was using Headspace for a while, which I liked because it's an app. A lot of it's free, but you can pay to like have more courses or have more specifically guided ones. So it's nice because it will guide you through your meditation versus you just feeling like a dummy because you're trying to breathe for 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice because it just kind of gives you a really great place to start, I find.
Okay.
And then I got back into it probably in October. And it was nice because it was just kind of providing, I'm not a good napper. I can't nap, but I have lots of practices.
I'm like a cat. I nap. I'll sleep anywhere.
I wish. But I found it was still like I could, you know, sit there and listen to this guy talk for 10 minutes about, you know, progressively relaxing your body.
He's talking the whole time?
Not the whole time, some of the time.
Okay.
But I just found it was a really great way for me to relax and to recover. Because, you know, like the whole thing about being a full-time athlete is that my full time means that I'm not, you know, messing around between sessions. I am actively recovering. I like cook really good meals. I meditate.
Yeah.
I, you know, I think about the rehab protocols that I have to do at prehab. And so this was just a way for me to recover more. And it kind of started out like that.
Okay.
And then I found this other app called Calm, C-A-L-M. And I liked it because it had all these nature background noises.
Like birds and whales. And
yeah. Stuff. So it was just really relaxing. And I was kind of getting, not sick of, but I just didn't feel like having someone talk quite as much in a guided meditation. And I was at that point, I hadn't realized it yet, but where I could truly just sit there for 20 minutes and breathe. And just, I liked having that background noise because it was just relaxing.
Yeah.
And,
Keep going.
Yeah, the more I did it, I realized that I would just, after 20 minutes, I would feel like I'd slept for 3 hours or something. And I was so happy, and I'd go to practice, and I'd be in such an amazing, focused state because I'd been able to turn my brain off.
Right.
And then I was, you know, able to really focus my energy more where I wanted it. And practices got better, and my sessions became more efficient. And so it really became more of a tool for having a quality practice and not even as much about recovery.
Right.
But, you know, it kind of depends on the day now, and it depends on how I want to use it. But it's been really amazing for what it's done for me, like mentally, for practice, emotionally, just for well-being and for recovery.
Okay, so how woo-woo do you get with the meditation? Do you get like those Indian dudes who only eat one piece of rice a day because they meditate? Like, do you go that deep? How deep do you go?
No, I'll just, I'll do any, like, I've kind of realized more lately that I don't need, like, I was doing 40 minutes a day at one point in a row. But it's just because that's how long I was doing it for. And I was enjoying it, so I just keep going. And now I've kind of found that I don't need it every day. But I do take moments to see the awesome in the ordinary. So it's not woo, you'll see.
Okay.
It's about being present in what you're doing, in everything that you're doing, or choice.
I've heard this.
The one common
being present a lot. I have no idea what that means.
It's one of my favorite things to do. So I clean a lot. It's not one of my favorite things to do, but I do it a lot. And sometimes...
In your house a lot? Or like your apartment?
Yeah, I like things to be ordered. It makes me feel calm and centered when my apartment is in order.
Okay.
And it used to stress me out because I'd be busy and I'd have to clean. And instead, what I would do, say I'm, you know, washing the dishes, I would wash the dish like, you know, I would wash it and I would enjoy it. I'd be like, this water feels so warm. The soap bubbles kind of look cool. and I'm not focusing on anything else except for just washing this dish.
Okay.
But it's, you go from taking a dish that's dirty to making a dish that's clean, and you've accomplished something. But you not only, you didn't just do this, you know, thinking about a million other things, or what you need to do later that day, or about how your session went that morning,
that
or about
exactly
whatever.
That sounds like what I do.
Yeah, but it's...
with you, everything.
Yeah, but it's not, you know, you're thinking about everything else,
that's
and you're not
talking about
enjoying your present moment.
Yeah. But I haven't enjoyed a present moment since I was 12.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, fair enough. But it's truly like it's a meditation in itself.
Yeah.
To do that. And it doesn't need to be you sitting there eyes closed with nature sounds in the background.
Or
it
can, humming and
it could be you tying your shoes and just looking like, you know, being present and tying your shoes. And it's these little moments throughout the day that stack up to feeling a little bit more centered, a little bit more calm, and a little bit more in your element. Because you're training yourself to focus on a process, and whether you tie your shoes with intention, wash the dishes, or throw a javelin, it's all the same thing.
That's a, I think that's a good way to end that.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Thanks for coming on, Liz Gleedle. I looked it up. You are, what do they call it? You got the blue check on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm verified.
Verified on Twitter.
Javeliz, two Z's.
Okay, Javeliz on Twitter and
Instagram.
Instagram. Okay.
The one Zed was taken, unfortunately, by some kind of bot.
Well,
devastating.
That's what that happens. So you gotta pick a song here. Where do we go on?
Oh, okay. Here we go. It's been my chill throwing song lately.
For listening to Thunderbird Locker Room on 101.9 CITR Radio, coming to you from UBC on unceded Musqueam territory. Check me out on Twitter, Chase Kelleher 1, and on Instagram, Chase Kelleher. Enjoy the rest of your week. Study hard. Exams are just around the corner.